the organization sponsoring tonight's forum. The coalition began about 6 years ago as a North Side PTO coalition, and has since expanded to include all the schools in the East High School attendance area. The group brings parent representatives together to address issues within the Madison Metropolitan School District and to advocate for all students. Two members of the coalition serve on the district's equity task force, which exists in large part because of efforts of the coalition to focus district attention on equity. Schools that are currently represented at PTO coalition meetings include Emerson, Hawthorne, Lackawanna, Lowell, Lakeview, O'Keefe, Blackhawk, and East. If you would like to learn more about the coalition, possibly join our monthly meetings, please contact the coalition member after tonight's forum. Coalition members have EAAPTOC on their name tags, so they're supposed to have that on their name tag. Our leave is open to sign. And now I would like to turn the microphone over to co-moderator Wendy Sobey.
Hello, I'm Wendy Sobey. I'm here representing the East Area PTO and the Northside Planning Council. The Northside Planning Council is a coalition of 20 community organizations on Madison's North Side, one of Madison's most economically and culturally diverse areas. Organized as an independent nonprofit organization governed by Northside residents representing each organization, NPC was initiated as a pilot collaboration between the City, County, United Way, Madison Community Foundation, and Madison School District in 1993 to create a vehicle for greater citizen participation in the decisions and issues that affect our community. NPC employs two full-time staff facilitators to help support the efforts of NPC's resident leadership. As a result of NPC's success, the second planning council, the South Metropolitan Planning Council, was formed on Madison's South Side in 1996, and a third one, the East District's Neighborhoods Planning Council, was formed on the East Side in 1999. Now, given a history, and I'm messing with the microphone a little bit, I'm going to introduce the candidates this evening. And the first one, let me credit adjust this. Our first candidate, and I want to mention also that Rick Thomas has contacted us to let us know that he'd be a few minutes late. So we will proceed. First candidate is Beth Moss for seat 3. Next, we have Tom Brew and Donnie Winston Jr. for seat 4. And Marge Passman and Maya Cole for seat 5. I'm sorry. I wanted to explain the format. What we're going to do this evening is we're going to let each of the candidates have an opening remark, and then there will be three questions that are submitted from the East Area PTO Coalition. And after that, there will be a debate between the candidates, and then we will take time for audience questions and answers, and the candidates' closing remarks. So each of the candidates would like to make a 2-minute opening statement.
And in fact, let me just point out a couple of audience things. You have scorecards on your seats, or perhaps you pick them up. And that's for you to keep track of how the candidates respond to the questions. Just make notes for yourselves. And you also have a card. And that's for you to write your own questions. And if you pay attention to what the candidates are saying, you may find that your questions are answered and you don't need to ask a question. But if you still have a question to ask, please jot it down. And our volunteers, can you raise your hands? Our volunteers will come and collect the questions before the audience time.
We also like to suggest that if you are a member of the Time Bank, that you donate your time dollars at the back of the room here, at the table where you came in. Also, I wanted to introduce Dan Hobie. He is the timekeeper in the front row, so that the candidates are aware of him. You can't miss him, so pay close attention. He's an important part of this forum. We ask candidates to directly answer yes or no to questions when asked, and we will follow up if necessary.
Okay, we're just getting the hang of this collaborating thing here. So, now it's time for the candidates' opening remarks. Each candidate will have the opportunity to make a two-minute opening remark. And we are going to start to give Mr. Thomas a chance to get here with seat five, and our first candidate will be Murray Gassman.
Thank you very much. Thank you for welcoming us all to the forum. My name is Mark Gassman. I'm up to the seat that Michelle Russell will be retiring from. I have been a two students at my school, Leopold, Cherokee, and West High School. So I know our schools from the viewpoint of parents. I know what elementary school was like for my children, what middle school was like, what high school was like. And I've also been a teacher in Madison School for 28 years. I retired 3 years ago, and immediately became a mentor. I couldn't stay away from the schools, I guess. Became a mentor for first-year teachers, and that's brought me out to a lot more schools than I was a part of. I taught for Leopold, Marquette, Franklin Randall, and the last 20 years of my life, 10 years at Lincoln and 10 years at Cherokee. I loved every minute of teaching. I loved every grade I taught it. And what I think I can bring to this school board is a perspective of someone who knows a lot about our schools and a lot about education. And the other thing I want to bring to the schools is what I hope to bring, that I did bring, from CAS. I was the treasurer of CAS for the last referendum. And I was totally amazed at how the city came together for that referendum. And I would like to continue that and have us all come together to help our schools. Thank you.
Thank you for getting to my
mind. Okay, I'm going to try to do this without a mic. Can you hear me in the back? Fine? Okay. The campaign started to feel like a fishbowl, and I feel like this goldfish that keeps circling around, and all of a sudden everyone's taking notice of me. My name is Maya Cole. I'm also running for seat five for the school board. Now that I have you thinking about goals, I want you to think about a box. And inside the box are a lot of contradictions. We have a $330 million budget to run our school. And over 10 years of budget cuts placed on us by the state. And yet every year, we go through the same process that threatens the fine arts, threatens to consolidate or close schools. And then eventually, if we're lucky or not lucky, we go to referendum. Our contradictions, our yin and yang, need to be spoken so that we can create a new consensus of what our school district and our common future will look like, not a year from now, but 10 to 20 years from now. Board members cannot afford a business-as-usual approach. They need to think outside the box. They need to think boldly, and at the same time, be pragmatic in their decision-making and visionary in their long-term goals for our schools and for all kids. We must be open to ideas and create new streams of revenue and new opportunities by engaging everyone in the community. And we need a board that understands its role as a board, which is that it is our duty to listen to everybody, to respect differing perspectives, and to take that inclusivity that we have in the classroom and bring it to the entire community.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Woodson.
Good evening. My name is Brian Woodson, Jr., and I'm the current president of Madison School Board. And I'm honored to serve you in this capacity. When it's challenging, I believe that we need strong leadership and experienced leadership to help us. So we just through our situation. I grew up on 4617 Julie Lane. My parents opened their first home there. I attended kindergarten through fourth grade at Lindbergh Elementary School. And I'm a firefighter for the city of Madison, right across the street at Fire Station 10. Before that, I was the director of Bureau Court Neighborhood Center for a program for children, youth, and families in the community at shoestring budget. I also was a youth coordinator at Mendota Elementary School Safe Haven program. And I've also coached football at Warner Park here at the community center, right there at the park. on the school board. It is my father's year efforts for 100 Black Men of Madison. I have continued my partnership working with Bureau of Court, Kennedy Heights, and Northport Packer Center. I shop at Pierce's Grocery Store and Jones Garden. And my ties to the North Side, I believe, are strong. And continue to be regardless of what happens on April 3rd. But I would hope that I would have your support on April 3rd. I'm honored to serve. Thank you.
I'm Tom Brewer. I'm a lifelong resident of Warren Lake, Gary Madison, on the south side. I went to Longfellow Elementary School and graduated from Madison Central High School. Both schools have since been closed once again. I'm running for the school board because we're spending over $12,000 per student to educate our students. Yet, according to the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction, our third grade student achievement is in the bottom quarter of the state in the achievement. It seems like we do not have good, strong leadership on the board. I'm also very disappointed that the current board, the current administration, wants to close neighborhood schools. I'm in favor of neighborhood schools. I think that we can look at other areas to cut for money that we need. And I look forward to answering any of your questions if you might have. Thank you.
Well, thank you for inviting me to the forum. A couple minutes later, I was at a charity function. I'm a member of, I have a photo with the Aaron House Foundation, so I would say that. I apologize for being up here today. I'm also a long time resident of Madison. I moved here in 1990 from Wausau, and like so many people, I came here to go to school and I've stayed on. But I've lived here since 1990. I've lived on the east side of Madison, I've lived downtown, and I currently live on the west side of Madison. I graduated in 1991 with a degree in secondary ed. I taught history and social studies in the districts surrounding Madison. In 1993, I bought a business on the west side of Madison at the time called 1 Hour Dry Cleaners. I changed the name after several years and came right in touch dry cleaners, and I owned it for 12 years. I sold it 2 years ago to spend more time with my family and to do a lot of volunteer work. And as a lot of people do, I ended up taking on more responsibilities than I thought. I started some other businesses. I do small business consulting, and I help sell real estate to first-time home buyers. To get briefly to my major campaign positions, I first feel we need to admit that we have a problem and then address school safety and classroom climate. And I feel that until we address the school environment, we cannot really address academic achievement. Secondly, I feel we need to involve or increase parent and student input on school decisions. For too long, our parent voices have not been heard by our administration. We need to change our administrative structure from one that is currently top-down to a bottom-up administration. Thirdly, we want open, results-based decision-making, no closed-door secret agreements that are not in the best interest of our children, who I'd be a part of. And finally, I guess I need to finish up here. I want to maximize achievement for all students. All students should be moving ahead. We need to give everybody an opportunity to perform to the maximum of their ability. Thank you.
Yeah, my name is Beth Moss. Thank you for inviting us all here to speak tonight. I'm running for C3 also. I'm an advocate for our kids and for our schools. My family, like so many others, chose to live in Madison because we wanted our kids to grow up in a diverse community and send our kids to schools where all kids have opportunities. As a former classroom teacher, I have empathy for the challenges faced by the staff and teachers in our schools. I have 2 7th graders at Jefferson Middle School. My son has special needs, and my daughter is a typical 13-year-old. That is a new perspective that's not currently represented on the board. I participated in school, district, and community-wide efforts to improve education and the schools. Last fall, I was a co-chair for Community and Schools Together, or CAST, the grassroots group that worked for the passage of the financing referendum. I've been a school co-tutor, a classroom, and PTO volunteer. I supervise an education advocacy group called Helping Hand for Autism that has been recognized as a model of student initiative and empowerment throughout the state. As a member of the board, I will continue to be an advocate for all students, especially those who do not have a voice. The school board faces many issues. The budget is the most pressing. I will provide hardworking, strong leadership to help the district tackle those challenges. The public education represents our hopes for our future and for the future of our children. It gives all children a chance to succeed and an opportunity to be contributing members of society. And I would very much appreciate your support to MSD on the school board. Thank you.
Now that we've heard from all the candidates, we will move on to the three questions from the East Area PTO Coalition. The first person to answer will be Maya Cole, and the first question is regarding the next superintendent. The question is for Maya. Superintendent Art Rainwater will retire at the end of the next school year. If you are elected, what qualities will you look for in the next superintendent? Please be specific. 2 minutes.
Step back from this question. I get asked this question a lot. I would like us as a community to look at the process at which we go about looking for a new superintendent. We are not just functioning in a box. We need to look outside of that box and look out toward the community. I have contacted folks from the local tech college, the university, Chamber of Commerce.
May I have your attention, please? There is a white Corolla license plate number 972GFE. Your lights are on. A white Corolla license 972GFE. Thank you.
I hope our timekeeper will give her.
He's very professional. Okay, I'll continue. So I've gone out in the community and I've invited folks like this that are experts on what our community needs to serve on a roundtable to direct and instruct our board on what they would like to see. The second thing that I'll address is some direct examples of what I would like to see in the superintendent. I would like to see someone that doesn't follow so much the top-down administrative structure and is more open to collaboration. I would like to see more inclusiveness. I would like to see a superintendent that has a very good working knowledge of what a growing metropolitan school district looks like. Also someone that is open to new ideas, that is not going to give us the same budget constraints every year. Someone that is open to looking at other avenues like charter schools. But, you know, frankly, it's not up to me. It's up to the community. It's up to all of the experts to come back with what we need. And we need a lot of things. We need to be looking 10 or 20 years from now.
Ms. Passman, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you. First of all, we need someone who understands the uniqueness of our community. This is a unique city, and our schools have always been the pride of Madison County. And so that person has to come into this job knowing that he is coming into one of the greatest cities in our country, and that it believes in our schools, and that it believes our schools are the great equalizer for every single one of our students. Now, having said that, he needs to know that we have to reestablish some communication with the parents. First students. That has been one of the serious deficiencies of Art Rainwater. I've respected a lot of the things that he's done, but I believe that he's alienated a lot of parents. So I suggest we reinstate the once successful parent advisory committee that meets with the superintendent every single month, where we hear from him what the newest ideas going on in our district, what the newest curriculum is, and where the parents suggest to him what they think the needs of their children are. Secondly, I want to reinstate the teachers' committee, the teachers' superintendent committee, so that they have some input. I don't think teachers have been listened to the last several years in this district. I want to bring them back into the picture, too. We're going to ask them to do more with much less. So those are the things I want to see in a new superintendent. And I wanted to come in, not dismantling everything under the sun, but looking at what's good in our district and what we can keep, and what's not good and what we should change. Thank you.
Ms. Brew?
I think that the new superintendent, Bob Forsyth, I think we owe a debt of gratitude to Superintendent Greenwater for the last 10 years that he served here, and also for giving the city ample notice that he is retired. That, excuse me, not there, that is a few more. That gives the city and the board time to find a new superintendent. We should find somebody that is we need somebody that can reach out to the community as a whole. 70% of the taxpayers in the community, not have students in the schools.
That way. I also need, we need
a new superintendent that is open to public input, that's willing to listen to parents, listen to students, listen to the teachers. And you know, the other candidates have said that also, that we need to have a superintendent that is more open, that is willing to listen and take suggestions. And so that's the second thing I would really like to see. And again, kind of along with that, I'd like to see a new superintendent that believes, again, bottom-up administration that goes along with that, that instead of having a top-down structure, that we as a district knows what's right for your child. I'd like to see a superintendent that actually, again, takes input from parents, listens to new innovative approaches, and comes up with some new solutions. And quit trying the same old thing next year's growth.
Choosing the next superintendent is one of the jobs for the board. It's one of the most important jobs that they'll have. We need to look at someone who's coming from a district that's similar to Madison, that has similar challenges, budgetary challenges, demographics. We also need to look for someone who will be coming to this community and want to stay. This is not going to be a stepping stone onto a bigger district or someplace else. Somebody by heart may want to come here and we hope do a good job and then stay on until retirement. This needs to be somebody who understands the high expectations of our community. We have a community of very involved, very well-educated parents who like to have a say in what goes on. This person needs to understand that and be open to that. Also, Art Rainwater has been very effective in working with the union, and it's very important that the person who comes in continues that tradition, because that has created a very smooth working district. Also, it's important that this person understand the history of inclusion of all students in the Madison School District, that people in Madison want equal opportunities for all of their students. And so we want someone who can come in and hit the ground running with that and understand that that's where we want to go with our district.
Now we're coming to the second question. This is a rather complicated question, I think. So if you refer to the second question on your scorecards, you can always follow along. Last year, the Board of Education created an equity task force in response to our PTO coalition's efforts to highlight the need for all schools to have the resources they need to provide the same educational opportunities while meeting the basic educational needs of their student population. Since some schools have more students with higher needs, this would mean more resources for those schools. The Equity Task Force will present its report to the Board on April 9th. Its report touches on many matters, but will certainly address the need to tie funding allocations to needs. Our current allocation system distributes resources among schools mostly based on student-to-teacher ratios. If other factors, such as high poverty in a school and the necessity for full-time social workers are considered, the current system seems inadequate to achieve equity. Therefore, would you support replacing the current allocation process with a needs-based system that distributes resources proportionate to a school's poverty rate and other needs indicators? If such a policy were in place, it would provide a sound principle for making budget decisions. And we will begin this round with seat four, Mr. Burton.
And just getting over there. Thank you. I'm against against this. I think that we should keep the policy that we have now. Yeah. We'll go towards a shot.
I'll not bore you down. Say what you really mean. Now, I'm sorry if you gave me that you're having a problem. Please take all the time that you need. I want to make sure that, you know, it's important, obviously, in forums like this, that we're able to talk to people. And, on a campaign trail, it's difficult. And I hope people understand that. And I respect that time. So, that's kind of you. I really believe in the equity task force. I really believe that we need to make sure that we have task forces that are inclusive of
parent representation, staff members, community members. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes forward from the equity task force. I know it's been a long time coming. I believe it's been over a year or so since you've been leading hard at work. So I really look forward to seeing what you've come up with. I do believe that we need to have a transparent process that ensures that schools with high needs get their needs met in terms of resources. I truly believe that. So this is going to create a process that I love.
Mr. Brew, would you like to join me?
I thank John for the I think that we have to look for the city and the county, some of their resources, especially with psychologists, social workers, nurses, those resources. I also think that we cannot take from one school against another in terms of staffing, because what this would do, if you're going to take some, instead of doing it by ratios of students to teacher staff, you're doing it by poverty or needs, that's going to be taken from somebody else, from another school that may need it. They may not have the poverty or the low income, but they might have some high needs of students out there. I think the current system could use some tweaking, but I think we should look more at trying to get city and county to step in and help the students also.
Thank you. And now we'll move to seat three, Mr. Thompson.
All right, very good. Thank you, again, I was reading through this question, and a lot really depends on how it is laid out. But the general reading of it, the way I read it, I guess I would have to agree with that, and we need to prioritize our resources in order to most needed. I really don't like the idea of being one school against another, but I think there's ways that we can work together, and I really like that it's initiated by PTOs and by parent groups. I applaud their efforts, and I think I would definitely like to listen to what their plan is. And I'm sure if it's one that really does meet these needs, I guess I would be in support of it, because it's amazing the differences I see between the schools and the needs in the different schools. And I guess you do need to prioritize where you put your resources and make sure we can affect the most number of kids in the most efficient way possible. So, again, I have to see the whole plan to say yes or no, but the general idea is
This question is, there's so many parts to it, and I applaud the Equity Task Force also. They've been working really hard at trying to find a direction for our district. And I think that right now, the important thing to look at is that I feel like, after going around the district, that all of our schools are struggling. Every single one of our schools has challenges, whether it's from a high rate of poverty or overcrowding, or possibly undervalued. They don't have enough kids, so maybe their schools won't be closed. And I think that as far as equity goes, it's going to be very important that we don't pit school against school, and that we look at, already there are state and federal programs that are trying to establish some sort of equity. With SAGE, with some of the Title I, II, and III programs that our schools get. But right now, there really aren't enough resources to go around for any of our schools. All of our schools need more. And I think this is something that, I really would like to see what comes out of the Equity Task Force and see what conclusions they come to, and I'm looking very forward to their report.
Thank you. Now we'll move to C5, and we'll start with Ms. Hanson.
Thank you. First of all, I very strongly support citizen task forces. I hope we will continue to use them as often as possible for input into what we need to do in the district. And I hope it will guide the school board in the decisions of the future. Now, having said that, I'm going to walk you away and see what the task force comes up with and what these details are all about before I formally comment on this. But basically, we judge our needs on free reduced lunch. A percentage of the school population has free reduced lunch. And so a school with 60% or 70% of free reduced lunch could, with the formula, get a good deal of support. But as a teacher, I worry about that student that has the same needs as that student in the 60% school. They're in a 20% school. Does that child get everything they need? That's the problem. And that's the sadness of having a formula. Some child, somewhere, some family is not going to get what they need. So we have to be very, very careful in this district when we have a formula, or if we use a formula, to make sure that we're covering every single child.
I also find this question very complicated because most of us haven't seen the final version. I did sit in on the Equity Task Force when they were discussing things a while back. And I know that in general, I think it was when they were first presenting their first piece to the board, in general they have a lot of ideas, but I think with any task force it comes down to, you know, what are we trying to achieve and what is our goal? And I would like the board to have more movement in that direction. And what I mean by that is that we do have a variety of kids that have different needs. And what I always say to my boys is that fair isn't equal. And that we are in a structure, a school structure, where we are really bound by a certain budget. And there's not a lot of flexibility. And I would like to find a way for the board to create more flexibility. One way to do this is to partner with the business community. And I know that some school districts have tried things like adopting a school. I think another way to do this is when we do have these one-time costs where we're either renovating or changing, that we go to the union and ask them to make an exception so that we can get businesses involved in the schools and incur some of that cost. Another thing that we can do is make sure that our teachers and our principals are trained in cultural competency, that they're able to work with every family. One thing that we miss, I think, as educators is that, you know, and as parents, is that the kid comes with a family, and we have to be able to assist that family in every way we can, because our number one goal is to educate all kids in the community. And we need to be breaking down barriers so that they can achieve their potential.
Thank you. Our third question is regarding the budget. The first person to answer this question will be Mr. Brewer. The proposed 2007-2008 budget of $345 million calls for cutting 16 special education teachers and 13 assistants and assigning students with only speech and language problems to a clinician rather than a teacher. It includes closing Sherman Middle School and moving students either to Blackhawk and O'Keefe Middle Schools, moving alternative programs into Sherman, or closing Marquette Elementary School and sending them to Lapley, making it a K-5 school. Cutting 88 teachers, 3 administrative positions, 14 educational assistants, 3 clerical staff members, and 1 custodian. Increased class sizes for kindergarten through third grade at Chavez, Crestwood, Franklin, Lapham, Marquette, Randall, and Shorewood. Elimination of the elementary strengths program, increased student-to-staff ratios at the high school and middle school levels, and increased hockey fees. Will you accept these cuts as is? If not, what would you cut instead, or would you prefer to go to a referendum?
I did not go to a referendum. I did not accept most of these cuts. I would like to keep the schools, the neighborhood schools, the elementary schools, Marquette, and Sherman open, and keep the class size at the other schools the same. Where we could get some money for that is
look at the state mandates, and see where we can get some money there. Sunday in the editorial page, they had an article that Superintendent Rainwater said that there's about 140 students or so that are costing the district anywhere from 20,000 to 269,000 per student to educate. I think that's one area that we could look at. Another area would be the social workers, psychologists, nurses, see if we can get the city and the county, because there's overlapping services there. Another one would be up at the Doyle building, there's 70 plus resource teachers. We could reassign those teachers to the classrooms to keep help the budget. Some of the other things, I would increase the student to staff ratios at high school and middle schools. Have to look at it to see what it all is. But I think we should be cutting more in the staff and mandates instead of in the classroom.
Tom, I noticed how your voice got real clear with that talk about money. Just cleared up right away. Tom must really be kicking in. Tom, I have to tell you, our board has been very proactive in this budgetary process. This whole year, we've been working very hard, very diligently on seeing what we can do within the constraints that we're under. We do look at the mandates, and there's things that we have to do. I want to thank two people out there in the audience right now, Lori Kupta, who's the chair of the Finance and Operations Committee, and also want to thank Carol Carstensen, who's the chair of the Long Range Planning Committee. I'll tell you, these folks work really hard, and we have been, like I said, proactive in looking at this budget, analyzing everything. So in terms of the budget cuts, I just want to answer the questions. Will I accept these cuts as is? No, I will not accept the cuts as is. If not, what will I cut instead? Well, right now, I have ask the administration to run analysis. That's how we work in terms of our budget. We ask the administration to analyze what the cuts are. I have asked in terms of an analysis of increasing some fees in terms of extracurricular activities for young people. I've also asked to look at some different service delivery models, in particular our reading recovery model, as well as moving the Bridge Street alternatives into an existing elementary school. And what would that look like? I've also been very a proponent of the alternative revenue streams. I think you may have heard of that. We are going to receive some additional revenue in terms of our partnerships with the business community, in terms of athletics. I've also asked for to analyze a request from DPI to see if that we could eliminate half days of school or some of them to see if we could save some money in that aspect. And then what we would do is we would look at the DPI requirements in terms of instruction, and then also look at how this would affect the collective bargaining agreement. So like I said, we've been very proactive in moving forward. And no, the community will not support a referendum at this time.
Got that, snuck that in. I took my time and I gave you time. Is that okay?
I don't like any of the budget cuts, and I know that, for example, with the special ed cut, you're going to be looking at much more intensive caseloads for special ed teachers. However, for that one, that is a $2 million cut, which is fairly substantial. We hope looking at another $1 million from the governor if the governor's budget is approved. So I think it's important to look at these cuts in the context of we hope to be getting some money back. So as far as the special ed one goes, I'm not thrilled with it, but I think that may be a place where we can go. I think that closing and consolidating schools should absolutely be a last resort choice. I feel that the neighborhood schools that we have are an asset to this community. They're community building. They, especially the schools on the isthmus, bringing a family to that area is extremely important to our city. I talked to the mayor about it and told him that you know, if you look at the district is trying very hard to keep these schools open. It's costing a lot of money. And what can the city do for us? How can the city help those neighborhoods to revitalize and bring families in? And he is very interested in that idea. I'm also opposed to increasing the class size. I think that everybody knows, research shows, small class sizes are better for all the kids. It's a best start for our children. As far as the athletic fees go, I think that that is a possibility. We need to look at increasing those fees, but we also have to make sure that we have scholarships available for students and families who can't afford those high fees to give everybody an equal opportunity. And after looking at after working with the referendum committee last fall, I understand how difficult it is to get a referendum passed. I'm not really sure that the community is ready for that. I also think we need to be long-term. If we go to a referendum now, and we need to again, how ready for the community, how ready will the community be in a couple of years? So it's important that we look long-term with the referendum.
Well, I too don't really like the cuts at all. Obviously, like everybody else, I feel that they're a result of short-sightedness, again, over the last probably 10 years or so, that we have really been looking long-term at for solutions to this. As such, we can't change the past, so things that I propose for the future is that we do an independent audit of the budget. I guess, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't always trust the administration to give us budget cuts that aren't politically motivated. So I think we need an independent person or group to come in and actually do an audit of the budget, do a cost-benefit analysis of our programs, and see which ones are producing results, which ones are not producing results. Keep the ones or even expand the ones that are getting results and look critically at the ones that aren't. Compared to the idea of the same service budget, I think we need to look more long-term. How can we do things differently? Keep doing the same thing over and over again. Every year we're going to come back to these things. So I think we need to change how we do budgeting and look more long-term. And again, a lot of these things are based on things I don't have access to, not being on the board. I asked Mr. Rainwater when I met with him about that, and he can't give me what assumptions they're basing this, like what kind of pay increases they're basing this on. Pension budget is going up over 4% next year. So where is the money all going? Again, they can't tell me because we're going into contract negotiations, but that is something we need to look at. As far as the community supporting a referendum, I think really at this time I don't feel the community would support it unless they really saw that, hey, we are actually running our school district in an effective and efficient manner, that we've actually looked at a lot of the different alternatives and different things that can be done. So I don't feel a referendum would be a wise choice at this time.
Ms. Cole?
I actually think this is a very important topic, so much so that I made my husband go to Kinko's earlier tonight. I brought off 100 copies of an opinion that I have on this, and it's red paper in the back for you to take home and share. I think it's important because it kind of shows the process that's been broken down when we do present a budget to the community. And I say that because we aren't really budgeting within a context that we don't even know what we're going to get from the state. We have an idea, but it's a guess. We went from budget deficit of $10 million to $7 million in a matter of weeks. We don't know what kind of special ed funding we're going to get from the governor. And we don't even know what grants the district and administration have been bringing in. It's almost like we have this ship that our superintendent is the captain, but we don't have anyone steering the ship. What's disconcerting to me is that we talk about things like task forces, and yet we had a long-term plan task force for the East Side that specifically said, don't consolidate schools, don't close our schools. On the West Side, and almost everywhere, we say, don't increase class size. And then these are the things that the superintendent brings forth to us the first time around. I would like to create new streams of revenue. to work with public and private nonprofit groups. I've started to do this now, and it was surprising to me, talking to someone who is connected to the downtown community, that they are concerned about that school closing. And we need to start this kind of dialogue.
Very sweet.
You should be on the school. Wow. Yeah.
I'm just passing over the left.
Yeah. It's wonderful that we have the plans for the future, no doubt. But here we are. We're in a crisis. Millions of dollars we need. We're not going to have. We're going to have to deal with it now. What are we going to do? Alright, so let's go through this little step by step if we can. This is the budget that we were handed. Just look over. And I look over. The real budget, this big, 37,000 line items. And if we have to look at that 37,000 times, we're going to have to do it. We're going to have to look very carefully at each one of them. And I think that's what we're going to have to do. Look at the recommendations that the superintendent and the staff have put together. We say yes, we say no, we say maybe, we'll look, and then we come up with it. That's what school board does. That's the decisions that we have to make. Now, to me, the bottom line has to be the classroom. That's sacrosanct. You interrupt the passage of learning from the teacher to the student, we don't have school system. So that has to be looked at, definitively, specifically. Secondly, closing schools. It's a long-term solution for a short-term problem. Our neighborhoods are constantly recycling in Madison. We know that. That's the history of our city. In fact, that's the strength of our city. Families move in, the children go to school, the children grow up, the children move away. The families move out. Bring in new families, and this is what happens in our neighborhood. So I am adamantly against closing any schools. That means people have to look elsewhere for the money. And that means going back to 37,000 line items and finding out where we can then make up the difference. Because it's today that we have that problem. And it's tomorrow, and it's the next day. And that's why I have to support the referendum. Because if it goes down, at least we're back where we started from. And if it goes through, we have a three-year cushion to help us fight the revenue caps and everything else.
Thank you. As we move into the debate portion of the forum, I'd like to remind audience members, if you have any questions, to go ahead and write those on the note cards so they will continue to be collected. Now that we're getting ready to move on to the debate portion, it may sound a little tricky, but this is another reason we have a timekeeper. It will work like this. The first candidate will have 30 seconds to pose a question to their opponent. The opponent then has 90 seconds to respond. Then the candidate has 90 seconds to share their response, and the opponent has 30 seconds to make the final rebuttal. Does that make sense? And we will prompt you, so you need to remember. The first question will be posed by Mr. Brew to Mr. Winston. Mr. Brew, you have 30 seconds to ask your question.
Yeah, President Winston, do you support closing Sherman Marquette Elementary Schools, and why or why not?
Good, not exact.
Mr. Brew, I do not know at this time. We are currently looking at salvation plans. We're going to get them track open last night. We didn't get down until 11:30 last night. We will continue our deliberations. This coming up Monday, where we will also talk about a referendum. Same time. But depending, no matter what happens, we need to look at everything that we have under our budget.
And Mr. Brew, you have 90 seconds if you'd like to respond to that answer.
Well, I'm in favor of keeping the schools open and looking for cuts elsewhere. And I'm not in favor of going to a referendum and permanently raising the taxes on property taxpayers.
And Mr. Winston, Mr. Brew, seconds.
Mr. Brew, you've heard a little bit about my background. I grew up here on the north side, kindergarten, fourth grade. I have some home in Lane. I'm a firefighter for the city of Madison here on the north side.
director of the neighborhood center here, coach football, groceries here, garden supplies. What have you done to help Northside children, youth, and families?
All right, Mr. Winston, you can actually use the next 30 seconds to pose your question, if that is your question, to Mr. Brew.
Yeah, what has he done to help Northside families?
And so you have 90 seconds, Mr. Brew, to respond.
Like Johnny, I'm a native Madisonian. I've served on the Madison Urban League Board and the Lyon CA Board, and I pay, as all of you do, and as Johnny does, I pay taxes. I've coached basketball at the YMCA. I've coached the ref in the city Madison School of Community Recreation.
All right, you have 30 seconds.
Well, the question was, what can be done in terms of the north side, particularly here in this area? Because I think it's really big people who came to this forum. They want to know, what are you doing to connect with them? And I think it's really important as a school board member that we connect with the community. We might not always agree with each other. We can agree to disagree, but not be disagreeable. But I think it's just really important in terms of my leadership. I will always listen to you. And I think it's just very important that we know that we have people that represent the true community.
And Mr. Brew, you get the last 30 seconds before we move on to the next campaign.
I look at it that I want to be an independent voice representing all of Madison, all of the citizens, students, teachers, staff, all of you. I've listened to you. One of the things I've looked at is to keep the Northside schools open and not to close them and find other ways to get the money.
All right. Now, Ms. Cole, it's your chance to pose a question to Ms. Pazman. You have 30 seconds.
Okay.
30 seconds for the question and 90 seconds for the rebuttal.
Thank you. The media is really interesting when it tries to contrast the teacher, the parents. I'm interested, after going through this process twice, that this is a highly politicized race and that there are a lot of things that happen behind the scenes. Given the fact that you have the endorsement of MTI, I would like to know what two specific things you would do differently in regards to teachers that are different from MTI that would benefit kids.
You have 90 seconds to
respond. Yeah, I don't think MTI has anything to do with policy of our teachers in Madison schools. They don't dictate anything to the superintendent. They don't tell you. The relationship is from the school administration to the teachers. The bosses of our teachers are the school administration, not the union.
You might have 90 seconds for rebuttal.
Basically, I think it comes down to this. We do have board members that are endorsed by MTI, and recently I went up to a couple of our principals and asked them about the insurance policy. And they specifically said, these two women said, I'm really busy right now because I'm trying to deal with my changing of my insurance. And they did not even know that the school board had put health insurance off the table and voted to not negotiate when we come to contract negotiations with teachers. And that's only if we even came to arbitration. So what I'm saying is there's a public perception, there's even a personal perception, that this tie between MTI and school board members is quite close. And I think that the public would like some reassurance that that is not the case.
First of all, it wasn't taken off the discussions. That would only happen if the QEO was not enforced, and we had to go to negotiations and arbitration. So it was not taken off. Let's say that straight. Secondly, you went to the MTI enforcement. You didn't get it.
We went there last year. We couldn't get it. I happened to get it. What would it look like if a former teacher did not have the endorsement of her fellow teachers? Oh, okay. That would look pretty weird, too. Really? All right. So we have that together. Insurance is a whole other issue. We can discuss that.
Ms. Katzman, you have 30 seconds to pose your questions to Ms. Cole.
A few weeks ago, you testified before the board that you were opposed to closing any schools. Last week, your written response to the Marquette Neighborhood Association appears to say that closing Marquette might not be okay. Last year, you attacked your opponent for her union endorsements. This year, you accepted the endorsement of AFSCME. Why have you changed your mind on these two issues?
Life is full of contradictions. The Marquette Neighborhood Association didn't come to me directly. It was done through someone who is currently running for office and is a member of PD and asked me to respond to what I thought of our Drainwater's budget presentation. And I directly responded what I thought of it because I'm about consensus building. I'm not about looking at issues that are black and white. For the second half of the question, the reason why I earned, and I do believe I earned, the endorsement of AFSCME is not because I had friends in high places or knew somebody. It's because I looked at them in the eye twice, and when they asked me the question, will you cut positions? What is your position on how we budget in this process? I said to them that I can't even keep my own house clean and that people like janitors are very important. And this goes back to this health insurance question. Why is it that the teacher's health insurance is so important that the board can't even say, we might need to look at this. We might need to. We probably won't, but we might need to. The principals have had to change their health insurance. The janitors have had to change their health insurance. And it's starting to look sort of classist.
Ms. Katzman, we have 9 minutes. I'm sorry.
Seconds.
I have an entire budget here. I don't know what the question is anymore. I didn't know we were discussing health insurance, running from that and running to this. Funny, I gave the same exact answer to AFSCME, but I didn't get the endorsement, so there must be something else involved in this. The simple fact is you've got to come up with a definitive answer. And you've got to give it in a nice, clear, lucid form. But we don't know what you're talking about. And I think in the future, we would expect answers from you that are clear. And we can say, yes, you believe this, or no, you don't believe this, or yes, you believe that. That's
all. It's holding up the last 30 seconds.
On my website, it says, in bold print, I will not vote to close the neighborhood school. I ran last year on the importance of neighborhood schools. However, this district needs to recognize that there are diverse opinions and that democracy is messy. It is not something where I'm going to march out with one opinion, my own opinion, and not look at all the evidence.
All right, and lastly, Mr. Thomas, you have 90 seconds. I'm sorry. 30 seconds to ask a question of Ms. Moss.
Yeah. As you know, I've talked a lot about reading in our schools, and currently 23% of the students in third grade aren't reading at grade level. I'm also talking about math achievement and that we're in the bottom 30% statewide. How would you hold the district accountable for these results?
Well, I have to say that I disagree with those results. This morning I was actually at a reading recovery session and talked to some of a teacher leader there, and she told me about the success rate of reading recovery and that reading recovery in first grade has kept many children out of special ed, which has actually saved the district a lot of money. And from the time that we've been speaking, the statistics from 1998 until 2004, actually the reading levels of the children have doubled. The increase in the reading levels has doubled. And so I think that the district is actually doing a good job. Our Greenwater was given an award, a reading award last year, I believe. talking about the achievement of the district and increasing reading levels for our students.
You have 90
seconds. Okay. Again, I guess that's probably where we differ the most, is I don't accept that 23% of the students not getting grade level is acceptable. I also like to point out that the change in statistics over the last 89 years, a big part of that increase, or they say kids are reading better, was because they lowered the standards. Again, by the current standards, 23% of our students are not reading at grade level. It goes up and down a little bit here and there depending on the grade, but again, it's pretty consistent throughout the board. Completely, some of the high schools is much higher than that. We really can't teach any of our other subjects unless we concentrate on that. As far as reading recovery goes, again, you know, I looked at the program. The district did an internal audit of that program, and they said that it had 150% achievement rate. I don't think we need to eliminate it, but we need to look at other better ways that we can maybe reform that program or make it be effective. I mean, it's effective for 48% of the students. Maybe we can take some of the money that is being used on the other 52% of the students and try to get alternative programs that work for them better. So, again, I think, again, the 23% of our students not reading grade level is not acceptable. It might be slightly better than it was before, but that is not acceptable.
And Ms. Moss, you have 30 seconds.
Okay, well, as a parent of a special needs child, I can say that he's not reading grade level. He has autism, and he is reading actually 2 years behind his grade level. And there are many children in our district who have lots of challenges. And I think that expecting 100% of children to read grade level is really unrealistic. And it's doing our children a disservice if you tell them that that's what they're supposed to be doing, because we have many different types of learners in our district. We have kids coming in from other districts. We have kids coming in from different cities who have not had the advantage of reading recovery in early grades.
I love that you do get 30 seconds to ask. Okay. That was just comment.
Rick, in the instance you said regarding the budget cuts, I think they are fairly well thought out and try to minimize the harm being done. Does that mean that you support closing schools and eliminating SAGE from several of our elementary schools?
Again, if you believe what the administration says, which is for the most part, I guess I don't a lot of times. Again, believing what I've heard from them, a lot of these cuts, they said these are the best things we can do. I would really want to analyze every single cut. I don't personally think that the $700,000 we're going to save by closing schools is a good cut. But in SAGE spending, not a good cut. I think a lot of things could be done a lot better. As such, I propose that we do an independent audit of our budget. Again, if you trust the administration, they say these are the best cuts to be made. I guess if you believe them, that's what we should do. But I personally don't believe them and think we need to do an independent audit of our budget, do a cost-benefit analysis of our program, see what's working, what isn't working. And again, I'm tired of the same service budget. We need to think more long-term and look at different alternatives. And as such, also, I also believe in increasing revenue streams, as the board is starting to do some of. I applaud them for that.
As far as
you have 90 seconds.
Okay. As far as the cost benefit analysis goes, I was wondering who would do that, and then who would be listening to the results of that if it weren't the administration. And as far as closing the schools, consolidating the schools, I would say that I don't think that is the best use of the money. I think that is going to be a disruption to too many families, many school children, many families, and also it's not going to be the best thing for our community. And I think that as a community, we need to come together. We need to try to get through this difficult time and have a show a face of unity throughout the district so that we can keep these neighborhood schools open.
Thank you. Again, as far as who would do the audit, I guess you'd have to hire an independent firm to do that. The school board would have to do that. I guess not the administration. I wouldn't trust the administration to hire an independent person to do anything. So I guess I would believe the school board should hire them. And
again, look at, do an analysis of the budget, and do, again, look at every program and do based it on zero-based budgeting or look at each program in that.
Thank you. That concludes the debate portion, and now we're going to go to audience questions, and I'll just give a little run through how this works. Audience questions can be directed toward a single candidate or a single register to all candidates. Candidates typically have 1 minute each to respond. In a few cases, there are yes-no questions, and in that case, we will not give them 1 minute. Okay. So you're going to start off with a yes-no question. Just so that we're all clear on each of your positions, yes or no, would you vote to close the school? And we are going to go to this one right down the line.
No.
You may have 30 seconds maximum to explain your yes or no.
As it currently looks, I would vote no on that. I think there's a lot of other things to look at. I don't think the $700,000 or so that they would save by many schools is really worth losing the neighborhood feel in the neighborhood schools.
At this time, I would vote no to consolidation and closing the neighborhood schools.
I would vote no to closing any of the schools.
I would vote yes because we have to use our resources most efficient and most possibly can because we're not going to lose the taxpayers to ask for more money.
There's an honest man. Good for you. I would vote no for the reasons I gave before, however. It's the recycling in our neighborhoods. It's keeping them strong. It's the schools that nourish our communities, and that's why I vote no.
I would also vote no. That would be probably the last thing you do in a school district is close the school. One way that we can keep our schools sustainable and viable is by opening them up to other nonprofits and programs. We already do that on one level, and I would like to extend that further so that we can accommodate our growing population.
Okay, now we'll do another coming down this way. This is going to be another very brief, we'll say 30 seconds. So it's not quite yes or no, but getting close. What do you think about Carol Parsons' idea for the referendum? Does anybody need a little refresher on Carol's idea for the referendum? How about Carol? Carol, could you just stand up and give us 30 seconds on your idea?
30 seconds.
Well, 45.
I have proposed that the board consider going to voters with a 3-year referendum for $6 million and an additional $6 million each succeeding year to both save off some of the more drastic cuts, such as the closing of and consolidating of schools, decreasing class sizes, doubling of stipends, but also to do more than just stop. Go back and restore fourth and fifth grade strengths, restore some of the TAG program staff, to provide a pool of supplemental teachers that could be allocated at the middle and high school where we have schools with high needs but no additional staff, so that it would have a way of shoring up our educational systems. And if we went to that,
And we'll start Maya coming this way.
I think it boils down to this. I like Carol's idea. I wish it would have been more in the form of a vision statement, guiding us to what we want for long-term planning. I disagree that one board member should go to the press and say their idea. I firmly believe that the board needs to have a unified voice and consensus and work together.
Okay. I don't think we can unify consensus without somebody coming forward and saying something, so we can talk about it and then get unified consensus. I think it's a great idea, frankly. I don't know if our community wants it. I really honestly don't know. But that cushion would be so important to us. Because all
all that icing on the cake that we have in our schools that we're going to have to give up. We're going to keep it until we can get rid of those horrible revenue caps. And I'm looking at people's taxes now. The average $134,000 house went down $530 in school tax. $214 for this one. Oh, okay.
It all went down.
I think Carol Carson is a wonderful leader in this community, and I respect her a great deal. And I look forward to seeing her proposal when it comes before the board. I just do not believe that the community will support an operating referendum at this time. But I do believe that as a school board, we do need to make the case, show the data, and show that in the future we are going to need an operating referendum. That will be in the future.
I am against the referendum for a couple of reasons. One is that it's a permanent increase. Another reason is that for every dollar that we give go above plus the caps, we have to give back some more money to the state, so it's really a $9 million referendum each year, and I don't think the taxpayers want that.
Yeah, I have to agree with Johnny that I don't think the community is ready for it. However, if it does pass the board, I will work very, very hard to get it passed, because it would be wonderful to have that cushion for 3 years, and then we wouldn't have to worry about the budget for 3 years. And also, after working so hard on it last fall, I know that it will take a lot of work on everyone's part. So if it does pass, I hope everybody supports it.
I do not feel I would support the referendum at this time. I think we need to look at the spending side first. I would feel that after an independent audit, there's really nothing else we could do, then maybe that would be an alternative. But also, we need to keep in mind that for every dollar we go above the revenue cap, we have to pay back $1.60, so it's not probably a very good use of the taxpayers' money.
Thank you. We have another question that will be for all the candidates. We could have a minute to respond to this one. If you're kind of keep it great. We'll start in the middle, just to mix it up a little bit. So, Mr. Winston, and if you pass to Mr. Brew, and we'll pass it this way, and then we'll take it back down to the end. Okay, what is the role of the school board in advocating for a better funding system at the state level? What about mobilizing the community to do so?
Well, we're going to start that next week. We are going to begin lobbying effort in terms of educating our community in terms of these revenue limits and how disastrous they have been to this school district. And so, in terms of the school board, our communications committee, led by Alex Sabera, we begin that process. We begin Thursday, the 29th, at 6:30, if I'm remembering the calendar correctly. So, I do believe the board plays a very critical and vital role. We are elected to be the leaders of the community. I believe that it's very important that we make sure that our voices are heard. We make sure we listen to your voices, and make sure that our voices are heard at a statewide level, and even the federal government as well, at least letting them know that some of our priorities are misplaced.
As a board, I think we should have our lobbyists lobby the state legislature and the governor up there to show what our needs are for a property-rich district like ours, and to make the state revenue caps, since we have them, more equitable, or get rid of them altogether and find another funding source, not just the property tax, but maybe another source to fund the public education.
I'm a member of the Wisconsin Alliance for Excellent Schools, and I've already been looking at and working toward trying to overturn the revenue caps. I think it is important for the board to work together with other boards around the state to try to galvanize the community, to get the community to tell our legislators and our governor that the funding is not acceptable, and we need to fund our schools, give them the money they need, and not tell them what they're going to have to cut year after year. So I do feel like it is part of the board's responsibility, especially at this critical time, to come together and to try to work hard to get more money infused into our school district.
And I do believe that at some point the board needs to educate the public about what the revenue caps have done to our schools, and to understand that they need to be reformed. There also comes a point where you have to just sit down and look at your own budget and your own personal data and do something about that. And you can complain, and that's about it. And we should educate the public and talk to the legislature and do everything we can. But it does come a time when we really just need to sit down and take care of our own budget and concentrate on that.
The question is, what is the role of the school board in advocating for a better funding system at the state level? What about mobilizing the community to do so?
I think the role of the school board member is to advocate for our greater community, to represent everyone in our community. And it's become obvious to me that through this entire painful process that there are a lot of competing needs. Whether it's kids, whether it's families, whether it's the elderly, that might be property rich but not income rich. I think it's very important that the school board work to change this. However, I would remind you that we've been under state revenue caps for quite a while, over 10 years, and that changing the state legislature is not a speedy process. I've gone and lobbied on behalf of kids, families at the state capitol, and it takes a long time. And unfortunately, I think we're in a long waiting line of districts that are up in northern Wisconsin that are far worse than us.
I belong to the world of maybe. We have to start somewhere. Maybe we can do this, and we are going to do it. And it's up to our school board to mobilize this community. And it's up to our school board to contact school boards all over the state and mobilize them. And as a unified force, we can get this done. We have one state legislature that's leaning on it now. All we need is six more votes in the other house. I spoke to Sandy Pope Roberts, who's probably going to be one of the greatest leaders on the floor for this revocation. Let's do it as a community. If Madison can't do it, I don't think any city in the state can do it.
Now, another question that will be for all of the candidates, and this one you will also have a minute to respond. And let's start. Raise your hand.
You haven't started with the recent.
How about you start on the 70?
I too do not believe that the schools and the city have been working together very well. They do some things together, and that's great, but definitely not enough is being done. And at this point in our history, I guess, it's imperative that the city and the schools work together. The schools aren't an island in and of themselves. We need to show this community, and the community needs to be involved in the schools. I have proposed that all students be required to perform at least 10 hours of community service during their high school years for each year they're in school. I think this will show the community, the students, and show how they're involved in the city, and they'll also learn a lot from being involved in the community. So I think this is one thing that we can do to make the cities and schools come together.
Now down to the end.
No, we don't work enough together, it's clear. But I propose that one of the areas we could really start off with some major discussions would be early education. I think our city has the groups, has the people involved, has the administrators for this kind of a program, which is sorely needed. We need early education in this city desperately. And I think they have the finances and the funding. I've met with the early education people. I've met with some of the city administrators. think this might be the first way to make this breakthrough, connecting the city with the schools, and they would be helping us tremendously in that respect.
I noticed this last year as lacking when I ran for school board, that the city and the schools seem to be at opposite ends of the spectrum. I think that our mayor does a really good job about talking about sustainable growth and development, and yet we don't do that as well when we talk about our schools. Not only have I gone and talked to the mayor, probably all of us have, but I also gave him information about to help him, to educate him. There's a wonderful journal called the Planning Commissioner's Journal, and it talks about how to plan a city and work closely with your schools. And I know that Mayor Dave is very green, so I even found him an EPA document that talks about sustainable growth, successful communities, and incorporating schools. We need to think outside of the box. We need to find what we're good at, educate those city members, and have them collaborate with us closely.
No, we don't work enough together. But we do have a common council board of education liaison committee that meets on a regular basis. Lucy and I, Chair Dave Lloyd, come to serve on that committee as well, along with city staff members. They are meeting on a regular basis. We do believe that that's very important as a school board. But we know more needs to be done. I do know that the mayor supports his supports the school district. I meet with him and talk with him on a regular basis. And we know that we want to do more collaboration between the school board and his office. In terms of my next few years of service, I will definitely make sure that this is something that I'll be actively participating in, not only with the city government, but Dane County, plus United Way and other potential funders, so that we look at our whole school district and try to get the best needs for met for our students. And I believe that does be a collaborative effort between everyone involved, including the city events.
One thing that we have to remember is that the school district does not cover all of the city of Madison. It also covers a third of Fitchburg, all of Sherman Hills, all of Maple Bluff, all of town of Madison. So there's more than one local government entity. Does the city of Madison work with the school district? Yes and no. It should be working better. We should be having more on the services, especially with social services, collaborating back and forth with that, not having overlapping services in the school and from Dane County or from the local units of government, the city of Fitchburg or the city of Madison. And I think we should open a dialogue more with the other cities and villages and towns.
Before we move to the next audience question, I know some of the flyers and other information about this forum have indicated it ended at 8:30. It's actually going to 9, but we'll try to keep the audience questions relatively short, and we'll probably do about 4 or 5 more, and then we'll move to the opportunity for the candidates to have their wrapping up and closing statements. So, next question, which we will begin with. Yeah, I think the pair down at the end, which would be C5, and it should be Ms. Cole again. So here's your question. You will have a minute to respond each. Zero tolerance policy currently in effect means that many students are expelled or suspended for frivolous reasons that have nothing to do with school safety. Your thoughts on this policy and on keeping most or all students in school?
There is a gentleman, my Michael Scott on campus to deal specifically with this issue, specifically with making our schools safe so that we remove those barriers and make education and learning the single most important thing. We also need to do a better job of getting in touch with our communities of color. They are impacted the most. And we should not be setting a policy beforehand without collaborating with others.
Zero tolerance is really very difficult to enforce if you think about it. Yes, everybody, you spell for it. And then you think about it and you say, well, this is wrong. Something's seriously wrong with this proposal. It just blatantly says what can be done. We can't be done. Frankly, we have enough authorities in our district. We go to every single teacher in the classroom and they can tell you what they want in the behavior code, what they need in the hallways. You can speak to any principal, they can tell you too. They're pretty good authorities on it as well. We can consult with others, fine. But we have an awful lot of good minds in this district that are really ready to sit down and really get to grips with this code of behavior. I look forward to it. I would like to work on this new code of behavior with teachers, with administrators, and see what we can come up with. But we must have preventative measures if anything's going to work. A child has to know what is right and what is wrong before we declare it wrong. So I think in education, as in every area, we have to prevent the behavior before it occurs and work that way. That's what that is.
Thank you. Now we'll move to seat three candidates with the same question. And Mr. Tenzer, who up first last time? You remember?
All right. Well, this is really my biggest issue with the schools, and I see every day in my business. I help people move in and out of the city of Madison, and the number one reason I see for people moving out of Madison is they don't feel the schools have consistently enforced the code of conduct. I'm not believe in zero tolerance rules, because, yeah, a lot of times frivolous things that people are thrown out for and more major things, nothing is done. Really, we have enough rules in our district. We need to consistently enforce them. We need to set high expectations for our students for the behavior, especially in the classroom. I do a lot of volunteer work in schools, and it's a growing problem I see, especially in the elementary levels. I don't see it quite as bad at the high school levels as I see it in the elementary level, but it's something we need to set high expectations for our students and expect them to follow through with them. And in conclusion, I guess I was just, we need to also base it on research. The district doesn't really know what the numbers are, and I guess I...
I am definitely not for a zero tolerance policy. We need to look at more restorative, not a punitive system of justice with our kids. And if they are expelled, we have to have something for them to do. We can't just throw them out onto the street and leave them there with nothing. We need to also, I've been visiting from the alternative site, and we really do need to continue to support our alternative site. That is going to help those kids who may be starting to fall through the cracks and who may end up being suspended or expelled. And I strongly, strongly believe in that. We also do need community input from leaders of all the different communities in Madison so that they can help to formulate some policies to try to engage kids more so that they will be engaged in school, so that their families will be engaged in school, so they'll see meaning in coming to school and working.
Go ahead.
I'm against the zero tolerance. I think we should use common sense. I also think we should sit down with students, teachers, and staff in the schools to come up with a common code of conduct that the students, the teachers, and the staff know is going to be enforced and enforced fairly for all students, no matter what school they are, what race they are, what economic background they're from. But whatever conduct comes up, it has to be enforced fairly. And for violence against a teacher, staff, or student, and then I am for zero tolerance if a student or somebody commits an act of violence against them, then they should be expelled.
Go to jail. One of our goals this year was to analyze our suspension and expulsion data. We've done that. This is leading to the changes in the code of conduct that you are going to be seeing do agree with the town in terms of the zero tolerance policy.
I almost need to go out in the hallway and scream. Otherwise, there'd be food, so I'm not going
there as well. And I'll be looking to change that. We do need to go to a more restorative justice type program in terms of we need to help students with their challenges and not just expel or suspend students. But when we do those kind of things, right now I'm working on a proposal to do a pilot program at a neighborhood center for students who are not meeting, they're getting their needs met at the school, so have them go to a neighborhood center for alternative education.
Thank you. We'll stay in the middle. We'll give Mr. Brew a chance to lead off with this question. The school board is currently looking at differentiation in high school classrooms. Should students be grouped by ability levels in separate classes, or should students with different abilities be taught in the same classroom? You have a minute to respond to this issue.
I think that they should be grouped according to ability, because then you have the ones that are fast learners are going to go on a fast track. Those that are slow learners catch up because they won't be behind and they won't get feel that they're dummies because they're at the bottom of their class. So it would be all, everybody would be equal in the class that is taught. And then it also would help, I think, in the discipline problem, also in the interest of the students to get them so that they're in classes where they're mostly equal in ability.
Thank you, Mr. Winslow, please.
I think it depends on the class. I believe that in our disciplines of math and science, I do believe that there does need to be advanced placement in talented and gifted programs for students that are
being just talking about high school.
So I do believe in that. In terms of differentiation, I do believe that the teacher themselves needs to be a master at what they do, and that's the only way they're going to be able to differentiate the curriculum. But I do believe in advanced placement talent and gifted programs for students.
Thank you. Can you pass it to your mom?
Okay. On the high school level, I agree with John completely on that. I think the highly technical classes need to have advanced placement, need to have honors. We need to have these children challenge up to the next level of their need. There's enough discussion for the other grade levels, and I will have to go into that. But I certainly support that. The discussion classes, rather than the technical classes, I think inclusion is wonderful. And I think the debate that goes back and forth in the open discussion classrooms of history and English, I think would be just fine. Although I still believe there should be honors classes and advanced placement in English as well as in math and science.
I go back to the process of how the board comes to decision making. I think the role of the board is to go to the community and find out what we need to bring our school district forward 10, 20 years from now. All the evidence shows more AP classes, more interbaccalaureate programs, more technology, and so forth. High school reform is going on right now throughout the United States. And instead, we have a superintendent that changes things over the summer and institutes extreme differentiation with core classes at the high school to a point where we had to kind of stop everything and revisit it. So what I would like to see is a policy in place where we're very clear with the community on what you're getting for your kids' education, that we want to challenge every single kid. And when we go to budget cuts, we don't cut things like TAG that's been shown to benefit every kid, not just them.
Thank you. And we'll start with Ms. Long.
I think the differentiation in classes is possible, and it's also very important. It only is effective, though, if the teacher is trained in differentiation and if the children who need the supports have the supports in the classroom. As far as elementary and middle school goes, all the classes can all be differentiated, and all the kids can be together in the classes. They can learn from each other. Even in science, they can work in small groups.
Cooperative learning, learning in small groups is a perfect experience for kids of all differing abilities. In high school, we do need to have AP classes, we need to have honors classes, we need to have that equitably across the district. Some of our high schools have more than others. We need to make sure that all of our kids across the district have the same opportunities.
I believe that in the elementary levels, differentiation is taking place all the time inside the classroom. It can be done quite effectively inside the classroom. Students move around, you have small groups, seems to be working very well. As students get older, especially at the high school level, I think they develop interests in what they want to do. And so we need to encourage all kids to achieve to the maximum of their ability. And so I am a strong proponent of the AP classes and honors classes and all those types of things, and making sure that students have classes that are of interest to them and that are practical for them, and that they are given the opportunity to take things that they're interested in and make sure that they stay in school.
Now, I think we'll just start with you folks down here at the end. This is probably going to be our last general question, and we have two questions for specific candidates. Shall we begin with Mr. Tom? And I think for this one, if we can, to keep it to 30 seconds, over 50% of Madison households have no children in school, and now we have trouble recruiting teachers. What are you going to do about starting teacher salaries?
That's negotiations that the board has with the unions. Right now, there's nothing I can do. I'm on the board. I can certainly make some proposals and make sure that that's the case. And frankly, I corrected that statement. It was not right, and I did correct it. And it's not the lowest in the country. It's the lowest in the Midwest. And certainly, we have to do something.
And now our final audience questions that we can keep within our time frame is in fact from Mr. Woodson. Please explain the recent agreement between the board and MTI to not reevaluate the health plan. Would this potential savings not be better spent on teacher salaries? You know that.
Right now we're in negotiations right now with the Madison Teaching Union. So that's what it is. It is what it is. And in terms of our health insurance, it is on the table. We are negotiating everything. And, you know, unfortunately, there's some people who disagree with that, but we are.
Thank you. To all of you who came out tonight. The achievement gap is closing and reading scores are improving, yet we need to continue these trends and do more to challenge every one of our students. We need to look ahead and prepare our students to become global citizens. You know, I've visited many schools in the district and understand that our diversity is a strength and that needs to be nurtured. And while at the same time, we must ensure equity across the district. The state finance system needs to be fixed so that our district can continue to provide an excellent education for our students. I will work very hard to change laws that force the district to make painful budget cuts each year. To achieve this success, we must involve the entire community, and all of our children deserve the chance to thrive and to fulfill their social and academic potential. I have a personal stake in our schools. I'm committed to keeping the school district strong and something our community can be proud of.
All right. Again, thank you for inviting me here tonight. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you. I'd just like to review my major campaign positions first. We need to admit we have a problem and then address school safety and the classroom climate. Until we address this issue, we really can't address the academic achievement issues that we have. I was really appalled by the district when I asked for numbers on how many violent incidences in the schools, and I was told they didn't have those numbers. So that's something we need to really address. Secondly, we need to increase parent and student input in school decisions. Actually, for too long, parents have not been listened to by the school administration. We need to change from a top-down administration to a bottom-up administration. Next, we need to have open, results-based decision-making, no closed-door secret agreements. Make sure we open our books to the community and do an independent audit of our budget. And finally, maximize achievement for all students. All students should move ahead. Everybody should be given the opportunity to perform the maximum.
That's where it's been done millions of times.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time
reducing schedules to come and hear all of us give our viewpoints and make up your mind then when you go to the polls on April 3rd. I think the number one issue facing the district is accountability of the budget. What are we getting for our money? There's over 70% of the taxpayers out there do not have children in the schools, and they don't feel that talking with them that they're getting worth from their from the taxes that they're paying. They're paying over $12,000 per student, and they don't like what they're seeing for the most part. And I also think that we need to reach out more to the community to involve them more in the school budget issues and in school curriculums.
Thank you for this wonderful opportunity to come and listen. I think it's very important to hear our views on how even the school government should work. I really encourage you to go to my website, johnnywinstonjr.com, but also encourage you to go to my opponent's website. I think the difference between us two are very clear. Outside of the fact that it's taller than me, I have to say that in terms of, I believe that our leadership would be different. Bill, I'm gonna make sure I answer your email, okay? I'm gonna get to it. Pam and Steve, I want to thank you for your incredible leadership at East High School and the Booster Club. We need that leadership in this school district, and I want to thank you. James Howard, I want to thank you for being a strong leader in this community, but also to make sure that you know that your sons are going to get the best possible education in this district. And Jim, I look forward to working with you and the rest of the Northside Planning Council to make sure that we have an equitable redistribution of resources in this district.
Part of an old English teacher, but for the past an hour and a half, I've been looking at this Dickensian tale of two school systems. It was the best of school systems, it's the worst of school systems. I think that's what our school system is. We work for the good, we start for the good, we take care of the bad, we bring it together, we have a great school system. Nothing's all wrong with our school system. No, nothing's all right with our school system. But let's just say that nothing's so good that it doesn't have some bad in it. Nothing's so bad that it doesn't have some good in it. Let's work from a positive respect for our educators, respect for our administrators. That's what we need, and that's what we should have. All right, thank you.
Thank you for having this forum. I really appreciate it, although this is the longest forum. I was here last year. So I don't forget you guys. I think it comes down to this. Every fall as a parent, the one thing I think about, I guarantee you, is who is my kid going to get for a teacher in their classroom? Number one person. But the role of the board is not to micromanage or look at or understand what happens in the classroom. It's to represent the entire community so that we can support that classroom. I differ with this with my opponent because I feel that we need to reach out to the community. I don't carry around a budget document. I carry around a stack of business cards of the folks that I'm going to turn to when I'm hopefully elected on April 3rd.
All right. On behalf of the Northside Planning Council and the East Attendance Area PTO, I'd like to thank all of our candidates for coming out this evening.